Good afternoon. Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Archer Direct Connect. This is Leonard Chamberlain, one of the managing partners with Archer. I'm joined today by fellow managing partner, Stacy Bressler, and special guest today, Lisa Carrington. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. Lisa is a director of procurement for a large investor-owned utility. Lisa, would you like to say anything before we get started?
Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to talk with you both. I've been in the utility sector for 20 plus years, doing a whole variety of things the last few years, fortunate enough to be part of the crazy supply chain world, the post-COVID world that has changed everything. I am here on my own, so I do not represent my employer, my comments today, but just looking forward to talking to you guys.
So, today we're here to talk about supply chain. SIP 13 came along years ago now. It seems like just yesterday, but it's been several years. SIP 13, of course, is the NERC-SIP standard that came into effect to provide some mandatory and enforceable requirements regarding supply chain. There were, of course, ties with other standards, SIP 5, SIP 10, for vendor remote access and software integrity and verification, but we're not going to get down in the weeds of those today. Specifically, we just want to generally talk about supply chain. Are we doing enough? Have we moved the needle for the industry?
Are we doing enough? I think the answer to that question is always going to be no. I don't know how we could ever really do enough. The adversaries move a lot faster than we do as industry, as vendors, as suppliers, as regulators. They're always going to be ahead of us. So of course the answer is no, we're never doing enough. Are we doing something? Have we done something? Are we on our way? Yeah, I think we are. The government always has two options when it comes to doing things. They have carrots and sticks. You know, NERC-SIP represents the sticks side of it. I think it makes sense that we finally brought supply chain into this conversation with security in a meaningful way. Is it just a baby step forward? Of course. I mean, it's really a baby step forward, but that's actually how it works, right? A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. And so you have to start somewhere. So it's a place to start to bring in a whole group of people who knew nothing about security. You know, these are folks whose everyday job is just to buy things. And yes, they mitigate risk for the company. They understand contractual language, but they don't understand security. Nor did security really understand supply chain. So if you think back to our ops O&P early days with NERC standards, it was the same thing. We were all in our little silos doing our own little work and never really spent much time with each other. So do any of us love regulations? Of course not. Like, nobody loves a regulation. Nobody loves an audit. Sorry, former auditors. We don't love audits. But it is one of the ways that we take steps forward.
Well, I think you hit on the point, Lisa. It started us moving in the right direction. Personally, I don't think it's making a huge difference, but it did do one big thing. Is I was surprised, and I get to look at hundreds of utilities all the time, and I spend an enormous amount of time on SIP 13. Unfortunately, I was tagged the SIP 13 guy here at Archer. But I get to see these utilities scramble just to know what their vendors are, which is a surprise to me. So that collection of vendor knowledge is huge. We've said this for years. Inventory is the baseline for any good SIP program, any cybersecurity program. And you have to know what you have before you can manage it. You can't manage what you don't know. And I think that inventory of vendors, at bare minimum, got us, you know, a lot further than where we were. The risk assessment process, I think we could do a lot better on that. I think really trying to understand what we're trying to assess is the challenge. And I don't think it's very clear yet what's the expectations. I think a lot of utilities I see are assessing the risk of the products, while others are assessing the risk of the vendor's controls. What are their good, you know, it's almost like an audit of the vendor. So where is it? Where is it both? Is it a combination? I don't know. But I think that's the next hurdle, is to try to elevate that. What are we trying to accomplish? What can an electric utility by itself accomplish with a vendor that services lots of different sectors that don't have a supply chain requirement or, you know, don't have this rigor. I think that that's the challenge.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also think it's a part of the maturity process that we go through. We have utilities of all sizes, all capabilities, all funding mechanisms from public to private. And when you say, you know, we don't really know necessarily each utility is doing it differently, well, sometimes that's a function of our maturity, right, as organizations and the investments that we make in, whether it's cybersecurity or regulatory or, you know, other compliance measures. It takes a lot of time for some of that to normalize and get out the information, get out from the largest, maybe most mature to the more, you know, the smaller, more rural utilities. And people finally get to the place where if you look back 10 or 15 years ago, we didn't have a great understanding of what a lot of this stuff meant. And even on the OMP side or, you know, in early SIP days, well, what exactly does that even mean? Well, we have a pretty good idea now, but it's going to take some time for supply chain to catch up. And supply chain specifically is in a really hard spot. We, you know, COVID gave us this sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs moment where we were starting to care about security and then nobody could get toilet paper and we didn't care anymore. I mean, if you only have so many things you can care about in a day, keeping the lights on is the thing I have to care about, right? I have to care about getting a transformer or care about whatever your practical operational things are. It seems like it set us back a bit on the security side of things.
It's funny, Lisa, you bring that up. I had somebody recently call me and say they had a SIP emergency. And I go, no, there is no compliance emergency. Your operations is your emergency area. compliance, we can fix that later.
That's funny. When people would call me that back when I was in compliance, I'd always say, if you're calling me, it's too late.
Yep.
There is no emergency. You've already done the thing. Now let's figure out what to do about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now that's speaking of toilet paper, I saw a great meme the other day. I'm old enough to remember when eggs and toilet paper were cheap enough that you could just throw them at people's houses.
I feel like I don't want to laugh at that because then everyone knows exactly how old I am.
Oh. No, but seriously, though, y'all hit on some great topics. You know, Lisa, one of the things you mentioned, we're talking about the audience for this is people that just buy things, right? And so one of the things that we've observed is, you know, a lot of organizations don't really implement a cross-functional process for managing procurement. You know, this risk assessment stays within the procurement silo in a lot of entities. And I think that makes it very difficult to do an efficient risk assessment valuation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Another thing you mentioned, yeah, adversaries, you know, moving fast. I mean, I think that's overall a general issue with the NERC SIP standards, you know, and the standards development process, all the way from, you know, when FERC initially orders it to when it's mandatory and enforceable. It just takes too long.
It does. I think one thing, Leonard, that you were hitting on, it was, you know, this concept of you know, the procurement department feeling ownership of SIP 13 and not having that cross-functional team. I've seen it a couple of different ways is that, you know, there's been a lot of checkbox solutions put in place where you really don't have a cybersecurity expert looking at things. You have somebody that just says, okay, I just need to check the box. So it becomes a paper chase. The other thing that I've seen is that they made it too complicated because they're worried that the language of the standards means more than it does. I've seen a significant amount of programs that are so robust that I'm going, wait a second, you went from zero to everything and you didn't read the standard. The standard's pretty simple. It's not a lot that you have to do. You do have to do a risk assessment. You do have to have a plan, but you don't have to overcommit yourself. And I've seen a lot of overcommitting, and that I think that's a risk. You know, you want to mature into this. I think maturity is really allowed right now. And, you know, let's make it simple on ourselves so we get our feet wet first before we jump into that cold water.
Yeah, great point, Stacey. We write ourselves into a corner a lot with our well-meaning, you know, our well-intentioned things. We'll paint ourselves into a corner.
Yeah. And I have, you know, a number of utilities that just, you know, they want to be the best, you know, let's show NERC how good we are. And that's great. I get that. I mean, I like to be the top of the pile myself, but you know, these are things that, you know, can get yourself in trouble. I mean, we've actually witnessed this in a few cases where utilities have this great big program and the plan is amazing, But when it came to audit time, they couldn't show that they were doing any of it. And that's even worse. So, you know, take a step back and really think about, you know, I know the standard's one thing. I know your goals of security is another thing. Try to mesh it into your level of maturity and plan it out for 5 years or 10 years. Because it takes 10 years to do anything in SIP, right?
It really does. At least to get good at it.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Stacey, you mentioned that in a lot of cases, it's, you know, I don't know, confusion was kind of how you framed it up, but talking about whether you're assessing the product or the service or performing an audit of the vendor. And of course, you know, I think that was one of FERC's original challenges with the order, is recognizing there's a gap in how a lot of the vendors, you know, were treating cybersecurity from a supply chain perspective. Yet the FERC doesn't regulate the vendors, right? So how do you encourage the vendors to do something? And that the regulation, the carrots and sticks, as Lisa was mentioning, that those are their tools, right? You know, to what extent, Lisa, have you seen the industry kind of moving towards maybe third-party assessment of vendors, a clearinghouse, if you will, and kind of offloading some of that workload from the utilities?
Yeah, the discussion seems to be picking up steam. I think when I'm talking with my peers in industry, more and more third-party risk assessments, you're hearing, you know, a lot of folks saying, why can't there just be, and this is from the supplier side too, why can't there just be a clearinghouse? I mean, how many times have we heard that over the years, whatever the topic is, right? Like, why can't there just be a single place? Why do I have to answer all these questions for all of you? And there's organizations out there, several of our industry organizations try to help by creating, you know, similar lists of questions and those kinds of things. When you get down to it, it becomes really complex. We have different needs as utilities. We have different focus. We have different risks. Our territories are different sizes. And so when you start looking at what exactly are the risks each of us need to mitigate, well, that depends. Do I own my own generation? Do I own my own transmission? Am I just a distribution utility? Do I only serve a single municipality? Am I federally government funded, where my procurement rules are very different than if I'm a private utility? So the complexity is significant enough that that's not an easy direction. While it feels like an easy button when you talk about it in the beginning, it's not as easy as it sounds to get us there.
That's very true. You said something interesting, though, Lisa. You said mitigate. SIP 13 doesn't require mitigation. Secret. It's a secret.
But this isn't about SIP 13, Stacey.
I know.
This is about risk.
It is. Yeah. So if you're doing risk management correctly, you definitely are making those plans to mitigate or remediate, whatever it is. So, yeah, compliance versus reality always matters, right? And
absolutely.
I think intent. I think that's something that, you know, the electric sector's really learned over the years, is that, you know, let's go do good practice and that'll be good things will come from it. Might not map directly to compliance. I think we used to say, you know, you do good security, compliance will fall out. That's not true. But it gets you at least halfway there. And it's better than not doing anything. And why not do these things for good business purposes? You know, translate the need into a business advantage. There's a lot of advantages of SIP 13. I know it's not about SIP 13, but it's about supply chain. But it does, you can take advantage of that standard to elevate your supply chain management overall. And it's a tool. And a lot of people look at it as a burden. I look at it as a tool. Just like any audit, I look as a tool as well. Use it to help educate your executives, get the right funding, get the right staffing. Don't wait for this to come down to you via a violation or something, or worse, actually be compromised.
Yeah, it allows us to also open the door and have that conversation with our suppliers. Those suppliers that are large and mature, you know, we could have those conversations before, but we couldn't have it with everyone. And the utility industry is extremely narrow and small, and our supply base is not large, especially our domestic supply base is not large. And so we could, you know, it allows us to have conversations about maturity that nobody was terribly interested in talking about it before. So you're absolutely right. It is a tool. Maybe it's a pain in the ass some days, but it's still a tool.
Your little story about being a PETA. We had one vendor that took this very, very seriously, the request for answering about a dozen questions. I was helping a utility, you know, get that information, and they took it so seriously, they lawyered up. Got to the point where they said, if you pursue this line of questioning anymore, we might, you know, have to make a legal decision. And it was like, what in the world? This is just simple questions. And eventually we got our data, what we needed from, you know, third-party information from their website, you know, your requirements that they do already, which is great. And it happened to be a big company that had all those ISO certifications and everything. And, you know, when you're looking at it from a risk perspective, if they got through that, there's no 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 or 100 questions I'm going to ask that's going to get me a better feeling than them getting that certification. So anyway, it was very interesting how that process went down. So the vendors feel the pain too. We're a vendor. Mm-hmm. I think we get hit, 5, 6 times a week on filling out different forms, different processes, different expectations. And that's going to ferret out as we grow and mature into the standard and our supply chain management, which leads to these tools that you were talking about, Leonard. I'm starting to see a lot of the tools be used. There's a number of them out there that perform some general risk assessment activities around a vendor. And I think a tool would be great. I wish there was a clearinghouse.
We all do.
Even so, with the tools, I mean, implementation of those tools varies widely and what you expect to get out of it. And for example, one of the most common use tools, NATF questionnaire, I have some concerns with how people are utilizing that tool to accomplish the goals of SIP 13. Even the implementation guidance, in my opinion, from NATF is inconsistent with even demonstrating compliance with some of the requirements. For instance, 1.2 immediately points to the 6 attributes. 1.1 points to the 6 attributes of 1.2. So where's the guidance for 1.1? You know, that's the risk assessment part. That's where I'm concerned that a lot of utilities are not doing enough in this area. They're looking at very minimum boxes to check about the vendor and not really looking at the risk assessment of that product they're procuring to put in their critical infrastructure.
Yeah, that's a challenge, Leonard. I think, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, different levels of maturity and where we're at. I do agree that, you know, for the electric sector, that SIP 13 needs a rewrite. It's very unclear. That 1.2, 1.1 separation gets a little confusing. It's hard to read and understand what the two differences are. So, you know, I think that's where some of this guidance came out, you know, early. The NATF guidance that's out there is at the beginning of SIP 13. It hasn't been matured lately, and I think it might be in a process of being fit up.
Yeah, I believe it's on the work plan for next year, I think, for 25. I may be wrong about that, but I know it is coming up.
Yeah, and I think that'll probably show a significant change of options and clarity. I think that's really what we're looking at for clarity, because I never believed that NATF expected people to take that spreadsheet as holistically and just send it out. I think it was originally, here's a whole bunch of options, you know, customize this for your own purposes. And people didn't.
Definitely. And we're all still learning from each other too. Yeah. NATF hosted a workshop earlier this year, which invited a lot of the supply chain folks to come together. And, you know, honestly, I've been in this industry for a couple of decades. I haven't had a lot of time that I've been able to spend with supply chain folks. I know where to find the security people, but we're just getting to this place where now the supply chain teams at supply chain security, supply chain resiliency, operations, there's a lot of pieces to supply chain that we're finally getting to spend some time together. And I think that will also greatly enable our maturity as we get as well connected as I think some of our peers are connected.
Yeah, I think it's gonna get better. And I know large organizations, that whole supply chain mechanism is very complex, especially ones that have been, you know, growing through acquisition. You could find, you know, supply chain things happening that should have been fixed 10 years ago that are still happening and you didn't even know it. It's a challenge.
As far as closing thoughts, I'm curious what y'all think as far as who should be leading the charge for supply chain and critical infrastructure. Is it the electric sector? Is it the government or someone else?
I think there should be, you know, sector-based supply chain requirements. But it's hard to do that when you don't have a government approach to supply chain for the vendors. You know, vendors are getting used to this SIP stuff. What happens in SIP 13-4, I don't know if they'll like that based on things I've heard FERC wants to do, but the vendors, if you want to move their needle to supply chain, better supply chain, I don't know if it's best done with one just the electric sector. I think you really need something more at the high level. And I know we have like the FedRAMP stuff that's out there that helps a lot. They're starting to get used to that, and they throw FedRAMP at us a lot and saying, look, we've passed FedRAMP. We should pass your little electric sector questionnaire. That's great. But it's not everywhere. And I just think it needs to be elevated. There should be a plan at the top.
So obviously my perspective is a little bit more utility or electric sector specific. That's where I spend my day. I let other people worry about the other sectors. The answer, of course, is no one person, no one entity can lead it. What happens if only the government leads it is they whiplash us all around and create things with unintended consequences. Now, there's opportunities to create carrots. Like if you think of the $6 billion investment that the federal government is making with Micron, adding, you know, semiconductor plants in the U.S. We have in Arizona two large semiconductor plants. So the pieces that really have to tie this together are bringing manufacturing back to the United States because we need it for geopolitical risk. We also, the more that we can bring into North America, the more easily we can control what's happening within our supply chain, right? Instead of just tier one, most of us, our tier one supply chain is in North America. We have no idea where they are. Tiers two through six, though, right? Those parts are coming from somewhere. So I think that there's probably six or seven different places, and we've got to all come together. The electric sector needs to be part of it. The government has to be part of it. The states have to be part of it because you have regulated utilities that are regulated by state commissions. We also have a massive push towards carbon-free energy, rightly so. It's the right thing to do. It's a massive investment, though. So if we're not creating structures where rates can be recovered, where we can afford to pay for the things, it's going to cost more to buy the things that are made in North America. So we need the government and the private sector to be working together to be solving these more macro level risks, not just how do we become more secure, but also how do we reduce our geopolitical risk and become more secure at the same time? Because to me, those two things are intrinsically married together.
Yeah, to me, it's a triangle, right? We have the vendors, we have the consumers, and we have government, and they all have to be working together. And you know, several years ago, pre-COVID, there was and they may still exist. I haven't looked them up for a while, but U.S. Resiliency. It was an organization that was funded by the government, and you know, I participated in that a little bit, but that had a lot of big players, Cisco, Microsoft, all these guys were involved working with the government and working with consumers about supply chain. And they need to continue that if they're not doing it right now. If you're listening, keep doing it. But it takes that technology aspect of it, right? The S-bombs, we gotta figure out that. I don't really like S-bombs right now, but I think in the future they'll be fantastic if we can automate some of that, but you'll still have to do the human aspects of it, and we have to work together. And so, yeah, I think you're probably right, Lisa. That's, your answer is way better than mine. Bad man.
I concur. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Lisa. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to chat with us today. And we'll see everyone next time on the next episode of Direct Connect. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the invite.
Thanks, Lisa.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and @ArcherSEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.